Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. This is Trumpet Radio Live, Thursday edition. Coming up on today's program, lots of stories to look at, including the fact that too many Americans can't afford their homes. They're in them, they're paying for them, but it's a little more than they should be paying. Also, economic news, another blow for Heartland workers, slashed pensions, people losing quite a bit of money, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better. And also, when institutions go left, that and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Dwight Falk with you here today, Grant Turgeon as well. I was telling you, Grant, before we came on the air, I hate to bring my problems out into the public like this, but today's one of those days I just didn't want to get out of bed. I want to keep on sleeping. I was tired.
Well, at least you got up. I overslept by a couple hours.
I'm not sure which is better. It was one of those days for me when I had the alarm set and I hit snooze about five or six times. And I thought I should have just set it for later because I just wasted. I didn't even get any sleep. I just kept waking up hitting snooze.
I would say my situation might be better long term because now I have an ambitious plan for the rest of the day because I'm already behind on what I wanted to get done this morning. So it's pretty good in that way that the rest of the day is packed. And then you can't get in trouble that way.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to sleep every time you say something. Like when you say something on the show, I'll just take
have a brownout.
A brownout.
Hopefully what you say somewhat relates to what I just said.
If when Grant stops talking and there's a pause, that's a little too long, and then you hear me say, yeah, anyway, you'll know.
Changing gears, I think.
I think. Anyway, to another story. We have some listener feedback I wanted to share with you. You can contact us, by the way. You can send emails to comments at kpcg.fm. We talked yesterday a little bit about mosquitoes. There's a lot of mosquitoes in Florida, like a billion. Well, billions, I don't know how many. Blew in from some storms. They're trying to get rid of the mosquitoes. And so we were discussing whether or not a mosquito can take too much of your blood to the point where it explodes, which I've never seen or heard. So this listener responded and said, if you pinch your skin to keep his stinger in you while it is biting you, he cannot stop sucking the blood, and so then he will explode. Try it sometime. So that's what he says. I don't want to try it on myself, but I'd be happy to see somebody else give it a shot.
So you would have to surprise the mosquito, because usually they fly away well before you have a chance to pinch your skin shut. I mean, maybe if you just slap the mosquito, you could get to it first.
Yeah, you'd have to be really good at pinching that area. Mosquitoes are not very big, obviously. Sometimes they're really, really tiny. So you'd have to be able to do that without it flying away. So anyway, they're telling me to try it sometime. So I don't know. I don't want more blood coming out of my body, but if somebody near me tried it, I'd be curious to see what happened.
Why would it not be able to stop sucking blood? It just anything it touches, it just sucks up? That doesn't even make sense.
Well, I guess apparently it just can't stop for some reason. It has to pull out, and if it can't pull out, then it blows up. But
that kind of sounds like fake news to me.
I'm
suspicious of that.
I don't doubt our listeners. We have very intelligent listeners, so that's what this is. We'll have to try this sometime. Maybe if somebody else knows, they could let us know as well. But yeah, if you'd like to send any feedback in, do that to comments at kpcg.fm. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Some of the news today, you heard on the headlines there, Senator John McCain, he has a brain tumor. He obviously was acting a little strange, and then he went in for a blood clot, right? That's what it was. And then they found out that it was actually, there's a brain tumor there. Following Senator John McCain's announcement Wednesday night that he has a brain tumor, lawmakers past and present from both sides of the aisle sent their well wishes to the Arizona Republican and his family. President Trump said in a statement, Senator John McCain has always been a fighter. Melania and I send our thoughts and prayers to Senator McCain, Cindy, and their entire family. Get well soon. The Mayo Clinic in Phoenix said tests revealed a tumor known as glioblastoma, an aggressive type of brain cancer with poor prognosis. So this might be pretty serious for him.
Yeah, at least the politicians are showing some class and wishing him well. I did hear, though, that someone in the media had a death wish for him.
Oh, no.
So they're clearly getting pretty militant. And I was talking with a friend this morning about how it does seem like they're able to get away with saying whatever they want. You know, wishing death on someone should not be something that is acceptable in any way. Any decent human being should hope that he gets better.
There was a lot of well wishes that came in from both sides of the aisle, and you know, when it comes to life and death, I think most people kind of put aside their partisan differences for something like that.
Most.
And he's served in the government for a long time. I don't know how old he is. He's got to be in his 70s, I would guess.
He was a prisoner of war.
Yeah.
I don't know which. Maybe it was Vietnam, possibly.
Somewhere in that time period. He's never looked super healthy just because he has, I think, some lingering effects of his war days. But he's had skin cancer over the years and now this situation. So anyway, tough deal there for Senator John McCain. Here's a story from Yahoo Finance. Too many Americans are buying homes that they can't afford. We talked yesterday about how a lot of foreign nations are buying homes, including China, Mexico, people from Mexico and a few other places. Basically buying them in Florida, Texas, and California. But homes are selling. A lot of people are buying. But the problem is, in a lot of cases, people are buying houses that they just can't afford. Now, they can afford them in the sense that they can make the payment, but they become what they call house poor, to where so much of your money is going to your home that you don't have much left. It's a bad position to be in.
I've heard that when trying to make a successful budget, you don't usually want to put more than about 25% into wherever you're living each month. If you do that, I'm sure a lot of these people are probably paying way more than 25% on those homes. Then, like you say, it is pretty much like you're poor, no matter what kind of house you're living in. If you're spending too much on it, you can't buy much else at all.
They say even with mortgage rates near record lows, almost 40 million Americans live in housing that they can't afford, according to some new research by Harvard University. This is what some economists say. So this would vary, I suppose, but this is the idea. It's the 28-36 principle, and basically they're saying your total housing debt should be no more than 28% of your income, and then housing and total debt should be only about 36% of your total income. So you have to factor in credit cards, other things. And when we're talking about housing, too, it's not just your mortgage payment. You know, your mortgage is typically, obviously, the principal, the interest, usually insurance is wrapped in there and a few other things. But then also your energy source. You have gas, you have electric, you have other things that you have to pay. So you have to wrap all that in there and look at those numbers. And they say that's not a bad way to do it. Obviously, if you can go through life with no debt, that would be amazing. But
right.
Not too many people can do that. 28%, they say, if you're paying more than that, you're probably in a difficult spot.
That's right. It is difficult to balance all those different things. Life is actually really expensive, and I'm finding that out just recently being out of college the last couple of years. And a lot of people my age are figuring that out, and they don't necessarily like being told about it, but we do need to know the reality of the situation and understand the value of saving, never going into debt unless maybe you're talking about a house loan, and that should be pretty much it.
Yeah, it's interesting because the challenge for a younger person is oftentimes they see what their parents have or their grandparents or something, and so they want that right away. I think that's maybe the hope, that you can graduate college and then immediately have, you know, the house you want, the car you want, and all these things. And it's very unrealistic in most cases because typically the parents or the grandparents worked for years to, you know, accumulate what they have, and you don't get it right away. It takes some time usually.
It does, and it does take some humility to understand the work that goes into building a good life for yourself like that. A lot of our families have done pretty well for themselves over the years, and maybe we just see them like that now. We don't necessarily see what it was like for them a couple decades ago before we were born and how much of a struggle it was at times. My parents have told me they had to move quite a few times and they didn't have much money even around the time I was born, but they're doing just fine now. It does take time to build something good for yourself and for future generations of your family.
It's because you stole all their money.
I did. They were always broke with me.
Every time, you know, all the parents out there know that, of course, that you have to spend a bit on the kids. But it's good. You know, you get to put them in activities, hopefully, and they eat food. And, I mean, you want to provide those things, but it's not free either. Right. Especially when there's more than one, which in your case, there's five of you guys all together? So
Four kids.
Four,
and
okay.
Two parents, so six in the house.
Right.
So that is definitely a challenge, and some of the hobbies we got into were pretty costly. I think, you know, the piano lessons,
sure.
The baseball practices, the Irish dance practices, those are actually very expensive because a good performance dress is hundreds of dollars. And if you ever go to a competition, you have to buy a new dress sometimes so that the judges don't see you in the same dress all the time. I'm talking about my sisters. But
sure.
Yeah. Not my dress.
Given, yes.
But yeah, it does add up pretty quickly. And of course, the food budget goes up a lot as kids get older and they start to grow. It's like they never stop eating too.
And then you guys, well, your parents have that giant cat too.
They finally recently got rid of that thing.
Oh, okay.
But that wow, that monster was eating probably 10 bags of cat food a month.
That'd save you $100 right there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So lots of expenses in houses. Homeowners, they say, according to a new study, almost half of homeowners regret what they did. Homeowners who had a role in the process of selecting a home this year said they wish they had done these things differently. 33% said they wish they had chosen a larger home. Fair enough. I guess sometimes you might buy one and then, oh, a couple of kids, and there you go. 26% wish they had done more or less remodeling. Remodeling projects are interesting because sometimes they pay off and you get some money back, and sometimes they don't. 15% collected more information before deciding. They wish they had more info. And 9% wish they had chosen a smaller home. So maybe the ones that wish they had a larger one and those with the smaller, they get together and just swap.
There you go.
Solve all the problems.
That would work.
It is a huge decision to buy a house, and some people regret. About 44% regret some things they did.
And I think we all know people who have felt like there was a rush to get a home for themselves. And that is, it's difficult because sometimes there are situations where just renting is really nice. I'm happy where I'm renting right now. It's a good situation. And so I would have to be really sure in my case that the house is not going to be too much of the budget, that it's in a good location, that it's safe. There would be a lot of factors to consider, and that would take some time to consider as well.
Renters, though, they also had some regrets. Here's what renters regretted. 41% wish they had bought instead of rented. 33% wish they had rented a larger home. I don't know, well, that's a big deal. Let's go rent a different one.
Right.
I mean, I know you might be on a certain time period, but still. 14% wish they had collected more info before deciding, and 5% wish they had rented a smaller home. Again, you can get out of that, probably. Probably get a different one if you want.
Yeah, a little over a year ago, I had an experience like that with an apartment block in town, and it was just such a hassle. They tried to make me give a $750 security deposit, and then the day I was supposed to move in, they tell me, oh, by the way, you were supposed to have already filled out these papers with the electric company and the water company, and so you actually won't have any utilities the day you move in. And so just kind of that's supposed to be sort of the honeymoon period where you're negotiating with the apartment block. It's not going to be any better than that after you sign the agreement. And I already felt like they were trying to pull one over on me, and I did not commit to that for that reason.
Yeah, there's some good renters and there's some bad ones. I remember when I was looking for an apartment years ago, and, you know, they try to typically entice you and say, oh, this is a good place to rent because, and they give you some reasons. And so I went and looked at this one place, and the lady working there said, oh, you'll love it here. Bunch of college kids, parties all the time. And I thought, nay, I do not want to live here. And I didn't rent there.
What a stereotype.
Yeah. I mean, I was probably 21 or 22 at the time, but I'm like, Does that look like that's what I'm interested in? I don't know. I mean, I thought I looked fine, but anyway, I didn't think that was a good selling point because I would prefer it to be quiet, and I think most people would.
Well, I've seen a picture of you from your younger days. Look like a stud, so probably.
What about
probably,
now?
Probably they just made assumptions. Well, nothing's
no,
changed.
No. I appreciate the compliment, but yeah. So for some reason, she pegged me as the party goer.
So now, shouldn't we just be grievously offended by stereotypes like this?
Yeah,
young white men just like to party.
Sure,
that's racism.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a...
Racism and sexism, we should cry out.
Yeah, it was... there is a funny story. I was kind of debating whether I should say this, but I think it's kind of funny. My sister then, a couple years later, ended up renting, I think, from that actual place. Mm. And there were a fair number of parties, college students and things. And she was going back to her apartment one night, and there was a couple of guys not too far away. They were out there just kind of hanging out. And they saw her, and they were drinking beer, and so they they looked at her. They said they were trying to be gentlemen, I guess, and they said beer bong for the lady. They were asking her if she wanted to participate, which she did not. But at least they were polite about it.
Wow, that old using old English,
yes!
Even in intoxication, they were able to speak in a high-minded way.
Yeah, it was very very Shakespearean in a way. Right. I don't know. Really, really interesting story. You got to be careful where you rent. our party goers always speak in the most Shakespearean English. Did you ever buy anything on Amazon Prime Day? Was that anything you looked at?
My mom did, actually. She's got some really nice luggage.
Okay.
She actually gave me one of them.
Oh,
so
great.
I'm thankful for that, Mom.
There you go. This was the best-selling product on Amazon Prime Day. It was an Amazon Echo Dot.
Oh.
According to Amazon, the Alexa-powered smart speaker was not only the best-selling Amazon product on Prime Day, but also the best-selling product globally that day. And it was on sale for $35, which is $15 off its regular selling price. I need a really sweet deal. I want at least 50% off. Don't tease me.
Exactly.
You're $15 off. It's an insult. They say in the U.S., other top-selling items were the Instant Pot, whatever that is, 23andMe DNA tests. Those are always interesting. And then more than 50,000 TP-Link smart plugs, 200,000 women's dresses, and 200,000 light bulbs were purchased as well, according to the company. So you can see with Amazon, they sell just about anything, and people have a wide variety of things they're looking at. Light bulbs, ladies' dresses, you name it, and they sold on Amazon Prime Day.
I do wonder how they convince all these companies to sell their items for discount on Amazon. But clearly, I mean, it works out for Amazon. They make so much money. That's just a brilliant business decision to have a day occasionally where things are cheaper. You probably attract 10 times the business just on one day.
Yeah, and it didn't mention how many people signed up for their Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, of course, a thing that they like to get people to do as well. Economic news, it's not great. This is kind of a rolling crisis, I guess, in some ways. This is another blow for Heartland workers, slashed pensions. So if you've worked for a long time for a particular industry, you're expecting a certain amount in a pension. Well, that's changing for quite a few. They say February was a bad month for Larry Burrell and thousands of other retired Ohio iron workers. His monthly take-home pension was cut by more than half. It was $3,700 originally. Now it's $1,600. You can imagine you budget, you know, for the money that you expect to be coming in, and all of a sudden it's cut down by a fair amount, more than half, and now you've got to try to make ends meet.
It'd be hard to imagine being in a situation like that where you work for a company for decades and they have promised their workers to pay them a certain amount in their retirement. And yet financial mismanagement, going into debt for certain transactions, and just in general being irresponsible, and it just puts people out. It's like they can't even have a secure retirement anymore. $1,600 a month is not much unless you're living by yourself in a really tiny apartment.
Yeah, and it's a tough deal for them. Things have been rough in the Rust Belt, they say, but this was a particularly powerful punch in the pocketbook for Burrell. He started in the trade at 19 and worked 36 years before opting for early retirement to make way for younger workers. Unfortunately, this sagging industry doesn't have enough younger workers to pay for retirees like Burrell, whose pension plan is in what the U.S. Treasury Department calls critical and declining status. This is sort of similar to the Obamacare fiasco, where, you know, theoretically, all these young, healthy people will pay in and pay for the those that are sick. Same sort of thing with the pension plan here. Well, you'll retire, but all these guys will come in, or girls and, you know, whoever, come in and work in these industries, and they'll be paying towards a pension, so it'll pay you. Yeah, but they're not coming in, and they're not working. So the money's disappearing, and they don't get the money they expected.
How do we even think it's likely that young people are going to get into those manufacturing, hard labor-type jobs when the entire society around them encourages them to get into a bunch of debt to go to a fancy college and to get some sort of business degree that you'll then spend the rest of your life paying off? They have to get a much higher paying job coming out of college to try to offset the debt. They can't be going into a factory usually.
They say at least 50 Midwestern pension plans, mostly the kind jointly administered by trustees for a labor union and a group of employers, are in decrepit condition. Several plan sponsors have already applied to the Treasury Department to cut back retirees' allotments. This cross-section of America includes more than a million former truck drivers, office and factory employees, bricklayers, and construction workers. So they are going to have cutbacks that could last the rest of their lives.
Just a terrible situation. I was actually talking about talking to some people about that a couple of weeks ago as well. Some people who have been in manual labor jobs, and there isn't a lot of security for people like that because the company really, sad to say, a lot of the time does not care too much about the future of those not even working for them anymore. They don't care a ton about paying people who are no longer providing them a service.
And like the case of this guy in the story here, Larry Burrell, he started at 19, worked for 36 years, so that makes him, what, about 55 now? Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of life left, probably, if he lives his normal lifespan. And he was counting on all this money coming in. So it's not like, you know, they're at the last year or two of life or something like that. I mean, that's kind of middle age. And so maybe he'll go out and get another job. I don't know what he'll do. But when you're planning on that type of money coming in, and then all of a sudden it doesn't. Can you imagine that, just the horror you'd feel when that check comes in? Oh, hey, yeah. By the way, we cut your stuff down by over $2,000 a month.
Yeah, well under half of what he was expecting to get, that he had budgeted to get. And it sounds like in his case, the company even encouraged him to retire. I mean, he probably would have been working longer if they hadn't convinced him that younger workers were going to take his place.
Right. Yeah, he was making way for the next group, but that's pretty young to retire, too.
It is.
You know, you still got a lot of life left. Here's a disappointing story. It's from Fox News. Virginia McDonald's employee refuses to serve uniformed police officer. Craziness. Scott Knaff, an officer for the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, they don't like the way he's treating the animals, apparently, reportedly paid for his food in the drive-thru line, but was allegedly refused the food when he got to the window. Knaff's wife, Kathy, told the newspaper that the employee saw the uniform and told her husband, and this is a quote, "I ain't serving no police." Well, there you go. Congratulations. You took a stand and made a difference.
Probably wouldn't have liked to have served an English teacher either, the way he made that statement.
It's double negative. He actually was going to serve all police based upon what he said.
Yeah, he doesn't even understand what he said. It is sad, and that just shows you the poisonous rhetoric that's being broadcast on a lot of media networks, the anti-police mentality that's in the country, especially in a lot of big cities. Whenever you're constantly saying that the police are to blame for any sort of shooting of a civilian, it's never the criminal's fault. It's always the police officer's fault. You're going to have impressionable young people believe that pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. This seems to be a pretty impressionable person. I don't think they're really thinking things through, this McDonald's employee. And so where did they get the idea to be mad at officers? They got it from the media. They heard it somewhere or some sort of media outlet. And, you know, have they even stopped to think, well, what would life be like without law enforcement? What would that employee's life be like if no one was there to make sure that the law was upheld? It'd be a riot constantly. We'd, you know, and so they're just not thinking these things through, and they're just going along with sort of this you know, whipping up of the crowd, whipping up of the mob, and eventually it does blow up, and he can't stop it once it does.
And that does seem to be the goal of some of these media outlets too. I mean, don't forget CNN had an entire panel of women put their hands over their head, as in hands up, don't shoot, which never happened in Ferguson, Missouri. That young man was actually attacking the police officer, trying to take his gun and shoot the officer. But hands up, don't shoot, that myth persisted for probably over a year after it happened. And I still think a lot of people believe that's actually what happened because of the way the media reported it. There's just a lot of hostility going around there in Ferguson. Up in Tulsa, in this state, there was another issue. Obviously in Baltimore, North Carolina, these are small incidents. I mean, we're only talking about a handful of examples in a nation of 330 million people. It's only in a few states out of the 50. And yet the media coverage for it is like it was a terrorist attack that killed thousands of people. It's really more extreme than the coverage ever should be.
This officer, Scott Naff, of course, he's an officer for the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. So they probably, the new protest would be hands up, don't fish. make sure they put an end to that problem with the fish. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. And more about what's happening in Jerusalem. Tomorrow's going to be a big day over there, potentially. They're talking about some day of rage. We'll have to see what happens over there in the Middle East.
Well, we just heard about a day of rage in Britain, too, with the communists. So now we know which people are all on one side together. Those terrorists and those people on the far left who are communists, in a lot of cases, they have common cause because what they're trying to do is tear down the country where they live.
There's a write-up from the Associated Press about what's going on over there. Israel and Palestinians dig in over Jerusalem site security. They say Israelis and Palestinians dug in over new security measures at a contested Jerusalem shrine after a deadly attack there, as international efforts were underway to try and stave off a major conflagration after Muslim clerics called for mass protests at the site on Friday. Israel's public security minister insisted Thursday that the metal detectors were essential to maintaining security, while Palestinians and Muslim religious leaders called for mass protests in the city if they are not removed. So that's the big, it doesn't really matter. They just want to get protests started. They just need to find something. And the great outrage over the metal detector. You know, if you don't have a reason to worry about them, then why would you care? I walk through metal detectors. It doesn't bother me. Take your belt off, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. If we just take a moment to analyze the thought process, why are they so upset that people with illegal devices that could harm people get caught in a metal detector? Why are they outraged by that? Anyone who is a peaceful Muslim going through the metal detector is not going to be stopped because they don't have a weapon on them. It's that simple. So they really are upset that there's an extra measure in place to stop terrorist attacks.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. You know, maybe something, maybe not, but definitely it's building over there, and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show talks a lot about that today. Make sure you listen for that. You can get the archives at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com as well. Speaking of thetrumpet.com, check out today's top stories. Iran's deep infiltration into Iraq was prophesied. That's by Stephen Fleury. Also, related to that, in the battle for Iraq, Iran is the biggest winner and America is the biggest loser. And is Iraq about to fall to Iran? Those are the top stories at thetrumpet.com. Interesting little write-up here from The Independent. There is this singer, up-and-coming French singer by the name of Barbara Veldins, died after collapsing in the middle of a concert, only 35 years old. They think she was electrocuted. Strange. They didn't give details on how that would have occurred. They're not sure if that's what happened, but they think that's what occurred.
Yeah, that's hard to even picture. Maybe she was holding a microphone at the time, or maybe the microphone was rooted to the ground and there was a charge through that. Maybe they had some extreme pyrotechnics on stage, but they would need to release some more details for us to even understand.
Yeah, she was on a stage at a church in a small village and in France, and she had a reported cardiac arrest. So they think she might have been electrocuted. You never know, but kind of that would be just bizarre to be at the concert and see that happen. Like, you probably wouldn't know for a while. You'd think, like, is this part of the show? Or is this, like, what's happening here? But anyway, that's just kind of an interesting story. You don't hear about that too often. I think the most deaths that have occurred from Ferris wheels have been electrocution as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because of just, a variety of reasons, I guess. But
yeah. Tall, moving metal targets.
Yeah. You just, it's one of those things that you have to be careful around the electricity. Grant, you've got a write-up for us here from townhall.com. He fights. They're talking about President Trump. Others have other politicians in the past, particularly President Bush, kind of just took it when the media went after him, but this current president fights back a little more.
Yes, that's exactly right. This author this writer is talking about how a lot of his leftist friends question him about Mr. Trump's decorum and decency and say, well, aren't you disturbed by his tweets? And there's just so much hypocrisy there because, as the writer brings out, they've been fighting a knife war unopposed for probably 50 or 60 years. They've been throwing aside all sorts of decorum. They have gotten rid of any type of decency in their politics, and yet now they're asking for the other side not to fight back.
It's interesting because I saw a write-up in Der Spiegel where this author was talking about how the left needs to quit, you know, being so nice and really get after it. And I thought, what world are you paying attention to?
It's upside down.
I mean, short of actual, you know, physicality, I don't know what else could be done.
Exactly. And like you bring out, George W. Bush, about as dignified as you could possibly get, despite the many outrageous lies that he faced that undermined his presidency. You have someone like John McCain, who prized this term collegiality, just trying to get along with everybody. Then you have Mitt Romney, possibly one of the nicest people on the planet, and he was a presidential candidate for the Republicans. And yet every single time, those people were savagely taken down, mostly by untrue, unfair attacks.
Mitt Romney is a good point. If you remember Mitt Romney in the election or the campaigns when he was running, he warned about Russia being a threat. And the left laughed him to scorn.
Well, well, well.
And look now, Russia's the biggest threat we've ever seen. What are we going to do? How quick it turns.
And it's actually true. He is right that Russia is a big threat. He was not getting himself whipped up into hysteria about it like the left is now. But when you see a nation as large and with as much military might and as many weapons as Russia has, of course that's a threat. And of course they have high-level cyber attack capabilities. The left is not focusing on any of those things, though. They're focusing on the fact that their candidate lost a presidential election.
Well, what was the quote that was made? I don't remember. Was it John Kerry that said the 20th century called and wants its foreign policy back?
I think that was him.
When they talked about Russia. So I guess it's calling again, apparently.
Right. And it's also incredibly hypocritical to point to Barack Obama as an example of decency and dignity. He may have said things in maybe an erudite type manner, but he wasn't being dignified, you know, purposely lying about what happened in Ferguson, like we mentioned before, to ramp up racial hatreds, because racial hatreds benefit his party. He lied about the deaths of four Americans in Benghazi, blaming that on a filmmaker who made fun of the Prophet Muhammad. He weaponized the IRS to destroy political opponents. So he might have been articulate in his speech, but he was not dignified. And he even had a direct quote about bringing a gun to a knife fight so that you could take out the opponent.
Yeah, they're pretty vicious when it comes to politics. And probably, I mean, both sides obviously are going to do their best to try to win. But the media seems just on its heels here a little bit because they are not used to a Republican leader, in this case a president, coming after them as viciously, I guess, or as hard as President Trump is. So it's a different situation than they faced certainly recently. I can't think back all the way. Maybe it's occurred before, but especially in the age of social media where the president can actually tweet out to people personally, it really is something the media is not used to.
Yes, and this article actually describes President Trump as the first warrior president in the culture war. So finally, the conservatives are waking up and realizing that they do have to fight back a little bit, because you've just seen morality so persistently undermined for about half a century now, tearing down the ideas of traditional family, undermining the Constitution, all of these things that will cause the country to collapse if you just let it go on forever. And now that you have a president who is willing to expose CNN, for example, or any of the media that has been lying to the people for such a long time, it's almost like they're reduced to tears right away as soon as someone actually hit them back.
Yeah, it's kind of the bully mentality. You know, you bully people, and then when somebody comes back at you, then what? You're not used to that. But what I'm curious about, and this will just be fascinating to watch, where does it go? I mean, neither side is really backing down, so what do they do? How do they just continue this back and forth? Does it ramp up in some fashion? You know, there was a little bit maybe of a dip after that shooting of the congressman, but that only lasted about an afternoon, I think, and then everyone was back at it. So what happens? You know, where does it go from here?
Well, all hope of civility and maybe a peaceful resolution between the Democrats and the Republicans is completely gone. It's almost like Mr. Trump would not be an ideal president at any time. But whenever you're talking about the left being as vicious as they are right now, it's almost like this author comparing him to Ulysses Grant, who was actually he was borderline an alcoholic. He was a chain smoker, and in peacetime he might have been kicked out of the army, but whenever it came to fighting, Abraham Lincoln said, "I cannot spare this man, he fights." General George Patton, talking about the world wars, he in World War II, without someone like him, even though he was pretty vulgar in his speech, Hitler and the socialists would probably be 50 years or 60 years 70 years into their 1,000-year Reich right now. So sometimes you do need someone who will fight back, and that's why this writer, at least, is a fan of the president. It is obviously the case that he would not have been the most ideal choice at any other time, that's for sure.
There's a new poll out that says 12% of the people regret their vote. Now, I'm not sure which way that goes. Maybe it's, you know, it could be split, or I'm not sure, you know, who they voted for, but people are having some remorse in some ways. You know, and probably neither candidate that was presented last time was ideal, obviously. Yeah. But it does take, you do have to admire, I guess, the fortitude to continue to fight when everybody's against you and everyone continues taking shots at you, at least in the media, and to continue to come back at them. That takes a lot of power, a lot of strength.
It does. And the most ironic, humorous part of the whole thing with Mr. Trump is that he's actually using the leftist playbook against the leftists, because they are big fans of that book Rules for Radicals from Saul Alinsky, and that's basically a book about Chicago style mob rule, and it's a book that is so essential to the liberals' war against America, it says here. And it also says it was the playbook for the entire Obama administration and the subject of Hillary Clinton's senior thesis. It is a book of such pure evil that, just as the rest of us would dedicate our book to those we love or those to whom we are most indebted, Alinsky dedicated his book to Lucifer. And we've heard a lot about that, and yet people on the left are proud of this book. Mr. Trump has actually used every tactic in this book against people on the left. It's actually quite brilliant. Instead of going after the fake media, he attacked CNN specifically. So he got specific in the attack against his enemies. He made it personal, and he employs ridicule, which Saul Alinsky describes as the most powerful weapon of all.
Yeah, that's really what it's come down to for both sides, is just ridiculing the other. And somewhere in there, you might find a little kernel of relevant information. But what the president has been good at as a candidate and as a president is pointing out where there are some problems, whether it's within the media or something nationally, solving those. Now, that's another matter. But at least he has pointed out where the problems are and has been courageous enough to call it what it is in most cases. And I think that's why supporters of his like him, is because he's called out some things that have bothered people for a while.
Right. And Specifically calling out the fake media. This article made a pretty chilling statement. It said, it is nothing but the incessant use of fake news that keeps the left alive. This writer brings out that the Democratic Party would actually be dead today if the media had been reporting honestly at all. He gives so many examples. He says, for example, if CNN had honestly and accurately reported then-candidate Barack Obama's close ties to foreign terrorists, domestic terrorists, the mafia, or this America-hating church, and he gives people's names to even back that up, what would have happened? Would Barack Obama have even been elected president? What if they had honestly and accurately conveyed the evils of the Obama administration's weaponizing of the IRS to be used against their political opponents, or his running of guns to the Mexican cartels, or the truth about the murder of Ambassador Christopher Stevens and the Obama administration's cover-up? What if the media had reported honestly about those things? How would the public feel about the left in America, about the Democratic Party, about the Obama administration? It would be totally different. And we've even seen studies about that where people are about 25% more liberal than they would be if the media didn't exist.
Yeah, and once you're into the habit of just lying as a way of life, it's very difficult to change. Like, you know, truth happens, but almost accidentally. Like, for example, that video they made of CNN, that undercover one where they admitted, you know, they were just trying to find something, some collusion, even though they didn't have anything. But they were just going to keep talking about it until hopefully something showed up. And, you know, that made the news for a little bit, very briefly, and then people just moved on. And then they still tune in, some do, to CNN, as if you're watching anything more than basically a fictitious sort of reality show.
Right. And CNN, obviously, the ratings for some of those channels are going up, I think more so for MSNBC, because for those who really do hate the president, MSNBC is more open about it. CNN still tries to masquerade as an objective news source, so I don't think their ratings are too great at all. But CNN did have to face a tough choice when Mr. Trump attacked them specifically. They could either go high, which is what Hillary Clinton talked about in her campaign, when they go low, we go high, or they had to respond to him and go on the attack back. And what they've done is they've chosen to become an anti-Trump network and attack him in every possible way. The thing is, it's completely backfired because Mr. Trump has forced them into a lot of embarrassing mistakes. They've had to completely retract a lot of their stories. Even though slander laws are so lax regarding the media that normally you could get away with some inaccuracies, their articles were so bad that they actually had to delete the entire things. That's not a good sign of fair reporting at all. That CNN has really expose themselves because they can't contain their emotions about the president.
Yeah, that's a really interesting situation. And again, what will happen? Will it escalate, or how does it end? That's going to be the thing to watch coming up. That write-up is from townhall.com. He fights. You have one other one for us we'll get to in just a second here. But before then, you might have been in a situation before where you're driving down the highway and it's pretty fast, and all of a sudden somebody flies by you on a motorcycle, and you think to yourself, wow, are they going to crash at some point? You've seen that, I assume.
Oh, definitely. And it just makes you wonder what's going through their mind. Maybe they don't care too much about life at that point.
Zipping in and out all over the place. How dangerous are motorcycles? Here are the statistics for you. Per mile traveled in 2014, there were 27 times more deaths on a motorcycle than in a car, according to the crash stats published by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. In 2015, per 100 million miles traveled, passenger cars had a 0.89 passenger fatality rate, while motorcycles had a 25.38 occupant fatality rate. That's a lot more. That means that 4,976 motorcyclists died and 88,000 experienced injuries caused from riding in 2015. It's a lot of fun for people that enjoy riding on them, but your chance of death is a lot higher.
I do like the motorcycles that have really, really thick wheels so that you could pretty much stay upright on it even when you're at a complete stop. But it does – I always have – horrible thoughts about them possibly skidding out and hitting the barrier in the middle of the highway, or you know, being down on the road as more cars come past them. It's just, it obviously is dangerous, and you would have to be careful. You would not want to be going 100 miles per hour on one of those, because then you just go flying off.
They say, of course, as you point out, there's, you know, some are more dangerous than others. Not every motorcycle is equal when it comes to accident rates. As you might imagine, super sport motorcycles are made for consumers, but are built like racing bikes, much lighter weight as well as very fast. Those are more dangerous. You see that sometimes people go flying down on those, and you know, it's just a thought that or just a reality that if you make one mistake, you know, in a car sometimes you might have something happen, but you can correct it pretty quick. But when you're on those bikes, it's a lot harder.
Well, I don't even. Maybe they have seatbelts on some of them, but I don't think so. And I don't think it would be too helpful if they did have seatbelts. Obviously, it's good if they wear a helmet, but a lot of them don't even do that.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of dangers to it. I do. Maybe something like a Harley Davidson that's not built for racing. It's just meant to. It kind of gives you the picture of traveling cross country and enjoying a leisurely trip instead of racing as fast as you can.
I saw a guy the other day driving on the highway, and we were all going 80 or whatever. And he didn't. A lot of times they wear like a leather jacket and pants to kind of keep the bugs and stuff off. But he was just shorts. I don't even think he had a shirt on. I was telling the kids, I'm like, imagine getting hit by like a bee or something. It's like it would hurt really bad.
It would.
But tough guy, didn't need it. So he had those. I would like to see a return of the side cart.
Yes.
You don't see enough of those around. Every once in a while you see an old-time bike with a side cart, and I think, good on you, sir. I like the side cart.
Well, those things actually stay up better, too. The side cart actually gives it a little bit more stability.
Get yourself one of those old World War II bikes, side cart, and then you get the leather like hat and the goggles, and you're good to go.
It's like you're flying an old-time plane almost.
Those things only go like 40 miles an hour. You'll be fine. No, I don't know how fast they go, but I do. There are some neat bikes out there, and I know they're fun to ride, but boy, just the stats are a little bit rough. You have another write-up here for us, Grant, from spectator.org. When institutions go left.
Yeah, this is this guy makes a really deep point, and it's that anytime liberalism takes over an institution, that entire institution loses sight of its fundamental purpose. What he mainly focuses on is Columbia University, because they have turned their attention away from educating students, which is their job, to trying to hunt down supposed sexual predators. And there's even a highly publicized case with them from about 5 years ago where a German guy who was at the college was accused by a girl of sexual assault, and she began carrying a mattress all over campus in protest, because a school board that he was basically on trial before, for some reason, not the police, that's notable, but a school board said they could find no evidence of any sexual assault whatsoever. So the girl decided she was going to try to file a complaint with the police after going to the university first, instead of to the police, whose job it is to take care of crimes. She started filing the complaint, and then for whatever reason, she never followed through on it, possibly because she wasn't telling the truth about the whole situation. But for the rest of her time at college, she kept on parading around campus with a mattress. She had a couple other friends who also accused him of sexual assault. But the fruits would seem to point in a different direction, that he graduated with the highest honors. She was a nobody, except for the fact that she actually got a credit for her performance art of carrying a mattress around campus.
And so he never was found guilty.
No, he actually hired a lawyer to defend him against defamation, and he actually reached a settlement. The university actually paid him, because they found no wrongdoing, the police found no wrongdoing, and yet they kept on letting this girl go around campus like that, just totally smearing his character.
Yeah, that's a really interesting situation. College campuses are very difficult when it comes to accusations and things, because it seems like oftentimes there's just a lot of illicit behavior going on, and it's hard to probably pin down exactly what is occurring. and I don't know anything about this situation, but there's got to be laws against that, to where if you're found not guilty, or if it never became a something that had to go to trial or whatever, somebody couldn't just sit there and continually, you know, accuse you, right? I mean, it seems like at some point they'd say, hey, you need to stop constantly accusing this person. We found no wrongdoing.
Right. You would think that, but apparently the college is totally in favor of free speech when it comes to something like this. When it comes to women's liberation or some sort of feminist agenda, you know, they do falsely push the idea of a rape culture, that one in four women in the country are raped. It's not even close to the truth if you actually look at the situations closely. Maybe one in four claim to be, but no evidence ever supports that. It's hard to imagine, even just on a practical level, that that could ever happen. But the university just seems to be in total support of these liberal agendas on campus, even though it's turning their campus into a zoo, even though you have people demonstrating, not studying for their classes. They're just out there on the street, on the sidewalk, yelling incoherent chants. They don't have any sort of authority to rein in that type of behavior.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine, that's Columbia, you said? Mm-hmm. Now, that's an expensive school, of course. And if you're going there, you know, you probably do pretty well academically. And somebody's paying for it one way or the other. And, you know, I think for most students who would have nothing to do with this situation, you'd want to be able to just go about your business and go to class. Now, if there is a problem, then it should be dealt with. But if they found there wasn't, you know, I can just imagine myself. I never really ran into any sort of protesting at school. I don't know. Maybe people were doing, I wasn't paying attention to it. But you know, everyone's going about their day, and you don't want to be hassled constantly by somebody protesting something, especially if it's a non-issue. You know, if it is an issue, I'm more of the mindset of, okay, if it is an issue, then solve it. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then forget about it. Like, don't just sit there and keep yapping.
Right.
Either solve it or don't, because there's no issue. This is just kind of a constant agitation.
Yeah, constant agitation. And this student even proudly declared it performance art. She was happy with the way that she received attention carrying this mattress around. Even carried it across the stage at graduation.
Oh, no.
She had to get help from several other people to carry it across the stage without probably knocking everything over. But what just craving attention, yep, and doing whatever it takes so that people will notice her. And the university really is to blame for situations like this. Don't they encourage co-ed dorms, boys and girls living in the same rooms in the same buildings across the hall from each other? They don't even separate the genders when it comes to restrooms at some of these places. They use the same showers and everything. So when you have an environment like that, it lends itself to just filthy immorality, but also to maybe even worse, where it's non-consensual as well.
Right, and that's such a hard thing whenever all restraints are cast off, but then at some point somebody wants a law upheld, or they want to. Well, you could have made it to where there are certain laws that, hey, that would prevent even the appearance of those things from happening. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to do that, but then come back and try to look at cases and try to determine what happened. It's going to be very difficult to determine what happened when you're just letting any behavior go until somebody's upset by it.
Well, how can a university pretend to be concerned about a female student's safety when they didn't even take the very simple step of putting a boys' dorm on one side of the campus, a girls' dorm on the other side, maybe even recommending that after a certain time at night, girls walk in pairs or in a group so that nothing could happen, whether it's from a male student or from someone who sneaks onto the campus knowing that there are a lot of females there. There are plenty of ways that the university could deal with it before it gets to the point of demonstration. But really, when it gets down to it, it's a liberal agenda. It's the myth of rape culture, and they are totally supportive of any type of movement that has a feminist ring to it.
Yeah, I mean, and we both have daughters, right? And if my daughter went off to college, I would be, as a parent, I would be very upset and concerned about a college where they allowed all that kind of intermixing. Mm-hmm. With no control, no restraint, all hours of the day, anywhere you want to go. I would be afraid for her safety. Not necessarily that she would be, maybe that a crime would occur, but it could. But also just that you're in such a bad situation. that eventually something could happen one way or the other. I would rather, you know, not allow even the bad situation to occur.
Right.
And for my son, I'd be afraid that he would get into a bad situation too, and either maybe be accused or maybe do something stupid. It happens. But the way you prevent it is you prevent the situations from even happening. I mean, who in their right mind, let's say, lives in a really safe community and says, I'm just going to hang out down where all the murders happen. We'll see what happens.
Exactly.
And then get shot and then protest violence.
Yeah.
I mean, stay away from it. So yeah. You try to avoid the problem in the first place.
That's so true. And the amazing part about this is that the people who will feign outrage at this girl's situation will also ridicule our vice president for keeping himself out of situations where he could be accused of anything like that. Remember, he does not have dinner. He does not have closed door meetings or meals with women who are not his wife. And yet the media went into a meltdown over that. This is the exact reason why any man should safeguard himself, and women as well. You don't put yourself in situations where something could happen. We've seen this put into practice here on this campus. You have a boys' dorm on one side. You have a girls' dorm on the other side. Girls do walk in groups, like I mentioned, after a certain time at night. And we've never once had a complaint of a sexual assault, and we've never had a resulting demonstration. It's never happened, ever.
Right.
In what has it been, 16 years now? It never happened once. And so there are a lot of easy ways where a university or a college of any kind could stop something like this. But when it gets down to it, they just don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really interesting point there. It is frightful to be on those university campuses for a lot of reasons. You have to protect yourself. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition. Make sure this for the Key of David program. Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.